This is Audible.
Podium Publishing presents The Legion Awakes, Book 1 of The Sleeping Legion, written by J.R. Handley, performed by Jeffrey Kafer. Part 1, 2565 A.D. Chapter 1. Beta City, Marine Farm Number 1, Cryogenic Revival Chamber Number 10, Level 8. Unlike many of his hardened brethren, Senior Lab Technician Ladatic Sionsi Hizabati was exceptionally tall. At 5'7", he towered over his peers, which inevitably brought him to the ire of the females of his race. In a female-dominated culture, any male who stood out quickly regretted whatever made him incapable of blending in. Further, while the Hardits were normally a lean species, Ladatic was a solidly built wall of muscle, which rippled under his short fur-covered body. Most Hardits had long tails, but his had been injured in a fire in his science lab. Ladatic was lucky to survive the fire, but aside from a burn scar on his snout and the amputated tail, he came out relatively unscathed. Still, he looked as much like a wolf humanoid as the rest of the Hardit species. His growl was just as intimidating, and his mind as cunning, maybe even more cunning. Luckily, the amputated tail didn't seem to slow him down in his scientific endeavors, though it made him less useful in any Hardit militia service. His ability to bounce back from this injury was probably due to his job as a technician rather than anything else, because the lack of a tail would certainly hamper his ability to perform as a miner or engineer. One drawback, however, was that in addition to making him visible to the female Hardits in his gynocentric culture, it also made him too intimidating to his masculine peers. This inevitably led to a solitary lifestyle, which suited his scientific pursuits, although it also meant that when he was lonely, he had nobody to lean on. After his injury, Ladatic promised himself he would never again be pinned down and helpless, relying on others to save him. He used his physical therapy time to exercise and bulk up, though no matter how strong he became, his insecurities always got the better of him. He became paranoid, convinced that everyone was staring at his deformities and whispering about him when he wasn't there. Much to the delight of his fellow Hardits, the once genteel scientist became a harsh taskmaster. He became known for the severity of his beatings, and several human auxiliary personnel died under the force of his rage. He worked himself to the point of exhaustion, expected no less from his subordinates, and rarely took subtle hints about the length of time worked and the need for breaks. Ladatic believed that his research into horticulture and the viability of underground grow houses could lead to a freer species, circumventing the natural Hardit agoraphobia, and their natural weakness to the searing high-energy sunlight on the planet's surface. In fact, he took the job running the cryo lab to give him the free time to continue his research. He was deep into that research when a secure message came across the digisheet on his desk with secure orders requesting cryopod number 002-20040725-941-0073 be immediately revived. He was so engrossed in his work that he missed the significance of the assigned cryopod number, and he paged Basil, the augs assigned to his lab. Why I bother to learn their names is beyond me, but this one is particularly smart, thought Ladatic. Basil, get your arse in here now, growled Ladatic into his comms device. When his words were translated through the voice box he wore on his neck, it really did sound like he was growling in a definite canine manner. Basil ran in, out of breath, and promptly reported in to his supervisor. Before he could even ask what was going on, Ladatic thrust the digisheet into his hands and ordered him to go awaken the occupant of the pod and ensure that his master wasn't disturbed while he went about his research. Chapter 2. Cryogenic Revival Chamber Number 10, Level 8. Auxiliary Technician Basil Terlor was having a bad day. Yesterday, Senior Lab Technician Ladatic, a really strict taskmaster, forced him to work into the wee hours of the night on some special project. Basil suspected the project wasn't approved by the Marine Corps chain of command. Ladatic was too ambitious, seeking to prove that he could be as valuable to Hardit society as a female. Unlike most hearted males, Ladatic was a tall hulk of muscle with a strength of character most of his brothers lacked, easily enough to overpower the gaunt, weakened Augsie servants, such as Basil. The Augsie's exhaustion meant he had overslept and missed his only meal, and his belly was crying for attention. Further, he didn't have time to utilize the Augs bath, which was reserved for Augsies assigned as stewards and technicians, so he was in the same filthy, lice-infected clothes he wore when not working in the lab. As soon as he reported in, Ladatic began beating him for his offensive odor and forced him to clean himself in the emergency detox shower. Damn those monkey wolves and their keen sense of smell. The emergency shower was pure torture, with water pressure that caused such a level of pain as to be comparable to a public flogging, without all the charm. After he was clean, Basil put on one of the spare technician uniforms kept in the lab for just such an occasion. He briefly marveled at the ability of these nanite-infested smart fabric uniforms to remain so pristine and white, regardless of what the wearer did throughout the day before. "I really will kill that drented fracker someday," thought Basil, lamenting his lot in life again, though in truth he was as close to a pacifist as any spawn of a human marine could be. Basil shook his head and silently laughed at himself. It just wasn't in his nature, which was the very reason he'd failed out of his first week as a cadet. He'd rather study the physics of ballistics telemetry than fire the weapon himself. Basil contemplated his life, being a second-class servant in a culture of warrior slaves, and momentarily regretted the day that he'd been booted from the training necessary to become a Marine in the White Knight Army. Anything, even life with the violent troglodytes in the Marine Corps, had to be better. At least the Marines were fed and weren't regularly beaten, tortured, and killed. He was pulled out of his lugubrious doldrums by Ladatic calling for him, and Basil was all too aware that not responding promptly would be a painful mistake. His predecessor died when that fracking hardit got into one of his moods, so Basil hollered out an affirmative answer as he scurried into the office to see what Ladatic needed. Turned out it was just a routine revival order, but Ladatic was too deep into his work to bother following it. Basil couldn't help but roll his eyes as he set out to retrieve the requested cryopod from level 10 and arrange its transportation back up to the revival chamber on level 8. He recognized that look, the one in Ladatic's three eyes. It said that he thought he was close to a breakthrough, though he was always on the very edge of a breakthrough. This also meant that you could get a few easy days if you could just keep him busy on his calculations and the various other accoutrements of his work. The only downside? When his breakthrough fell through, life would become very miserable. Basil silently thanked whatever supreme being made him that the retrieval process was fully automated, and shuddered at the idea of having to track the pod down himself. While waiting for the pod to arrive, he set out to get a uniform and to program it with the proper settings for the soon-to-be-revived Marine. He then made sure that food would be ready in the recovery room, where the newly revived could reorient to their surroundings. The room was huge, capable of housing a company at a time, but today its cavernous quality would just have to be cozy enough for the individual revival. Once he had sat out a uniform, complete with boots, cover, and a digisheet, Basil paged the mess stewards for food to be delivered. Immediately upon the arrival of cryopod number 002-20040725-941-0073, Basil began the revival protocol. First, he ran a diagnostics check on the occupant, one Sergeant Lance Scipio, to rule out the presence of diseases or defects from the cryogenic freezing process. Then he checked the integrity of the AI storage compartment, as a breach in that seal could end with an AI going rogue, which in turn would require initiation of reformat protocol. Once he was sure that the AI storage was secure, he opened it so he could insert it into the digisheet assigned to Lance. He could move it to his Amy later if he chose. He was shocked to discover several other AI units in there, bundled together in such a way as to make it clear they were stowaways. "I wonder what I'm supposed to do about these," thought Basil, while he monitored for resuscitation attrition as the machine ran through its revival process. Chapter 3 Cryogenic Revival Chamber Number 10, Level 8. The first thing Lance noticed were the bright lights of the sterile white lab where they were reviving him. He slowly became aware of his surroundings, noticing that he wasn't on board the Grendel anymore. That realization unleashed a flood of memories and regrets as he mourned his childhood friends who had died in his first mission. All they were supposed to do was investigate QEP-16, an orbiting quarantine enforcement platform that had gone offline in a nearby star system. What they had expected to be no more than showing up and switching the lights back on turned into a clusterfract disaster in which every other member of the company had either been sliced in two by a hidden foe or had been executed because of the dishonor their poor performance had brought on the regiment. Even their Jotun officers had been put to death. All but one, Captain Grimgerdy. In fact, he wasn't sure whether he was shivering because he lay naked in his cold cryopod, or because he was reacting emotionally to losing everyone he had ever known. His vision began to improve. The blinding light became pinpricks, which turned into floating specks of light across his vision, that slowly became a mere light sensitivity until he could see normally. When he could finally see again, he noticed the human in front of him, a male who seemed tall when compared to the Marines from the island where he was from. "Finally, I won't be a hugely freakish oaf," thought Lance. If only Jason had lived to see this, he'd love not standing out as the biggest guy in the room. Awash in his own private musings, Lance almost missed that the male was talking to him. "Hello, I'm Auxiliary Technician Basil Terlor. You've been resuscitated and are about to be returned to duty. Are you feeling okay?" "Wow, he sounds funny," thought Lance, a definite nasal sound. "I wonder how I would sound to him." "I'm feeling fine, Auxiliary Technician. The usual resuscitation hunger. I see that I'm not on board the Grendel anymore. Where am I?" "You're in Beta City on Tranquility IV. I'm sorry, normally I would have told you where you were being revived. Do you have any other questions before we proceed to the recovery room?" "Questions? I've got plenty, but let's start with the basics," said Lance through a clenched jaw. "Like where on Horden's hairy fanny is Beta City?" As he waited, assuming this Basil Fracker must be a dunce, Lance felt his tensions mount. This was not exactly like being resuscitated among friends the way he was used to. "You're in Beta City. I believe that they used to call it Marine Farm Number 1, and we're on Scrofa Island in Lake Sarpedona on the continent of Serendine. That is on Tranquility 4 in the Tranquility system, obviously. I don't know what else to tell you." Basil let out an exaggerated sigh. "Okay, I get it, I get it. I'm on the Drenting continent now. But you have to be such a fracker. Why wasn't I returned to the island?" Lance silently counted to 10 in his head to stave off the outburst that sat on the tip of his tongue. "The island? You mean Cardamine? There isn't a base there, just the one on Baleshore and the one on Serendine. Are you sure you're feeling okay? Do I need to call a medic?" The panicked look in his eyes and the pinched look on his face told Lance that calling a medic would be seriously bad news for one of them. He decided not to leave that dangling over the Beta City Augs. "Nothing on the island? When did that happen?" Lance sat up jerkily and got out of the cryopod. He could feel his legs, and though he was told to wait to get out of the pod, he was too jacked up to sit idly by. Chapter 4 Cryogenic Revival Chamber Number 10A, Level 8. Once Sergeant Scipio was up and moving, Basil escorted him to the Cryogenic Recovery Chamber. Officially, it was called the Cryogenic Revival Chamber Annex, but nobody but the Jotuns and bureaucrats of their ilk called it that. Once he unlocked the room, he handed Lance a uniform and waited patiently while he got dressed. Maybe it was Basil's AUG status, but once Sergeant Scipio was dressed in a proper uniform, he was somehow more intimidating. Basil wondered how civilians back on Earth must have viewed their military in the time before the White Knights became humanity's overlords. Were they held in as much awe, or am I just affected because it drives home how far I've fallen? "Okay, calm down and let's just get this over with," thought Basil as he continued to pace around the recovery room. After clearing his throat, he gathered up his courage to address Lance again. "Right, Sergeant, now that you're dressed, I will get you some food and then hand you your orders." Basil suddenly noticed how hot the room was and knew that if he kept sweating, Ladatic would make him take another detox shower. When the sergeant replied, Basil flinched and then hated himself for flinching. The years under the yoke of Hardit tyranny had ground him down into something he barely recognized, yet there was no hope of a better future for him. "Calm down, Basil. You're going to make me nervous with all that pacing. Why don't you just spill? Ask me whatever has you so worked up about." Basil began mentally bracing himself, trying to regain the confident boy he'd been before he was kicked out of the training regime. When he'd been in the 6907th TAC, he had felt like he could rule the galaxy. But in the end, he was kicked out of the Marine Corps for lacking a killer instinct. Now he groveled and scampered around like something less than human, and he didn't know how to turn the ship around. He asked with a wavering voice, "When I opened the storage compartment, I found more than one AI. Why do you have so many? I'm supposed to report any anomalies like this to my supervisor." Watching Sergeant Scipio digest this bit of news, Basil was convinced that this was as much a surprise to the Marine as it was to him. "To be blunt," said Sergeant Scipio, "you seem nervous, so let me assure you that I order you to withhold that information. It is classified as far as you are concerned, so I will take the UV rays on this one. I suspect that those are the AIs of my fallen brothers and sisters. They died heroically fighting, such is the life of a Marine, no?" When Basil looked into the sergeant's face, so earnest in his uniform and looking more like a cadet than a veteran sergeant, he couldn't help but be swayed. Heck, this Marine was being nice to him. Since when did that happen? In that instant, as Basil wavered, Sergeant Scipio again addressed him like he was a person. More than an ox, but as a human being with inherent worth. Sergeant Scipio began with that charismatic enthusiasm he had that made you feel compelled to obey. "Look, this is more than I can eat, and there's no sense in it going to waste, or worse, to the Hardits. Why don't you join me for lunch, and then you can give me those orders you mentioned?" When Sergeant Scipio offered his food, he didn't realize that he had done more than offer a starving man sustenance. He had also given Basil back a taste of self-worth he'd lost somewhere along the way. "When did I surrender my humanity? Was it during one of the many beatings and degradations since I left the 6907th? Basil realized it no longer mattered, because now that it had been brought back into the forefront of his psyche, he couldn't go backwards again. At that moment, Basil knew he'd take the sergeant's secret with him to the grave. "You had me at food. I won't say a word about any of it," Basil told Sergeant Scipio to his visible relief. "Besides, who'd believe a lowly Oxy anyway, right?" Between bites of food, Sergeant Scipio agreed, before launching into questions about the status quo and everything that had been happening in the Marine Corps in his absence. He begged to know how long he had been iced, but his entire record was classified tiers above anything Basil had access to. When Sergeant Scipio asked him about Captain Grim Gertie, some Jotun officer he knew, Basil gave him the only thing he could. "Sergeant, unless otherwise specified, the protocol would be for her to be returned to her base of origin. I don't know why we don't know about your base, but if the island's icers were left behind, she would likely be there. Your body was transferred because you were specifically requested. I don't know where you were transferred from. I don't know anything, so you'll have to look elsewhere for your answers." Realizing that he would get nothing useful from Basil, at least not about his own situation, Lance moved the conversation on to what was happening in the world. After desperately remembering his lessons from his prisoner interrogation classes, Lance led with open-ended questions about events on Tranquility. His training paid off, and Basil began to spout off with all the local scuttlebutt about current events. This was as close to journalism as you got among the White Knight client species cut off from the larger universe. He was shocked to hear the horror stories about the side effects of the newest version of the Marine combat drugs. He was always suspicious of anyone needing to rely on pharmacology to overcome a lack of training, but these side effects firmly set his mind on the subject. When he asked why they had abandoned the promising nanites technology, as it had just gone into human trials when he'd shipped off to the QEP system, he received a look that convinced him to move on. The research into viable, permanent, self-replicating nanites had clearly been abandoned long before the Zogs had come into the universe. Such a waste, losing the ability to give Marines permanent, self-replicating nanites. When he'd been in training, the technology had required daily injections of nanites, which made them of limited value in the field. He couldn't help but wonder how differently the debacle at QEP-16 would have gone if they'd had access to their nanites. Would they have run, leading to so many executions? It seemed criminal to let such technology languish and go to waste. Shaking his head, Lance returned to the confusing world he'd awakened into and got back to questioning his technician, milking him for all of the details he could. While it was clear that Sergeant Scipio didn't like Basil's description of life in the 6907th, he seemed to accept it and mentally file it away. Watching the Marine think was like watching one of the many robot droids process information. But to the best of his knowledge, no humans had ever been merged with machinery, and so Basil shook off his silly notion and handed the sergeant his orders. I believe that you will be assigned as the veteran sergeant for one of the G2 freshman cadet squads in the 6907th TAC Regiment. For what it's worth, they're a good unit. They're strict but fair. Or they were when I was assigned there. Basil looked down, again ashamed at having failed out of the Marine Corps, and failed his brothers and sisters. He knew he couldn't do it. He didn't have it in him to kill. But still he grieved. If only he could have been a space rat, filled some cushy technician billet so he could do what he loved doing, thinking and imagining. Finding new solutions to old problems, regardless of whether they had been solved or not. It soon became clear that Basil was right, because once Sergeant Scipio opened his orders, he read them aloud. This is for my benefit, he thought. He really is different than all of the other Marines. After letting the sergeant process his orders, Basil gave him directions and sent him on his way. This really was a pleasant morning after all, he prematurely thought, as Ledatic called his name. Oh well, break time's over. Chapter 5 Scrofa Island, in Lake Sarpedona, on Tranquility 4. After leaving the cryogenic level of his new home, Lance followed the passageways up the 8 levels to the Jotun Quarter on the surface. Jotun Kijiji, Basil called it, as he gave directions. This path took him on the most direct route to his new commander, and proved to Lance how the prolonged cryogenic state had caused some slight atrophy to his muscles, for he was clearly out of shape. The distance walked shouldn't have winded him like it did. This would definitely not endear me to Colonel Marchuka, thought Lance. He wasn't sure what to expect, having avoided Jotun City on the island like it had the plague. After he left the sally port, he stopped short, looking around and seeing nothing of Jotun Kijiji. The sentry told him most people just called the city Kijiji. Lance decided to take his time, walking around outside and enjoying the fresh air for a few minutes, before deciding that enough time had elapsed. He began looking for this city in earnest, but finding no indication that it existed, had to resort to his digisheet. These things sure have changed, he thought, not like I remember them. Once he found the mapping program, it was a simple and intuitive process to start the directional mapping feature. He still wasn't having any luck and was about to seek directions from the sentry at the sally port when he heard the distinct shriek of a gunshrike in the distance. He looked up, hoping to catch a glimpse of this glorious bird of prey that expended so much energy in its swoop that it had to make a kill every time or die. What Lance actually saw, though, was something even more magnificent. Lance suddenly stopped walking and became motionless as his eyes involuntarily widened and his breath caught in his throat. If only Danica could see this, she would be able to express the majesty of the design. This city wasn't the normal stock model. There was nothing redundant about its design, and it truly was a work of art where form trumped function. The city that had housed the Jotun officer corps on Lance's island home had been built on the ground, a vast complex of palaces topped with soaring spires connected with impossibly high glass walkways. It had been impressive, sure, but the sight before his eyes was more. The transparent nature of the Jotun construction materials made any location seem grand and immersive, yet still Kijiji trumped them all. Kijiji wasn't built on the ground, but rather was a city that seemed to be floating on the clouds. The city was still translucent, defying any marine who walked her halls with a weak stomach or a fear of heights. Not normally a man with a poetic soul, even Lance was drawn up short and forced to take a step back as the city called out to him. Not sure how he was supposed to get up there, Lance decided to use this as an opportunity to demonstrate to his new commander how resourceful he could be. And he ran back into Beta City to acquire some equipment. Chapter 6 Light Engineering Workshop, Level 4, Beta City. Lance took a chance, as an idea began to tickle the back of his mind, like a volcano seeking to break the surface until it could no longer be denied. He began to remember something that Sergeant Fontaine had said on board the Grendel, something about the White Knight obsession with reusing the same designs ad nauseam. Then memories, like a tidal wave, came pouring into the forefront of his mind. He finally understood the tingling thought that kept tickling his subconscious. It meant that all of the floor plans should be the same. Sure, a room or two might be different, but he knew exactly where to go. Once Lance had the idea in his head, he became like the gunshrite with prey in sight, unstoppable. After returning to the sally port, he hit the central descending passageway towards the light engineering workshops on level 4. He hoped that the rocketeering program hadn't been wiped, because the Death Pack was his ticket into Kijiji, and to making a good impression with his new boss. The Rocket Propulsion Pack RPP-1217, commonly called the Death Pack because of the number of test pilots who lost their lives perfecting it, was a backpack worn by soldiers that had a harnessing system designed to accommodate Marines in and out of combat armor. It was capable of allowing the wearer to maneuver around at high speeds, cover great distances and heights. In order to break the long-standing issues with devices of this sort, it ran on Hua gas, a newly synthesized noble gas known to be stable under extreme pressure, making it an ideal fuel choice for situations where temperature and pressure extremes were expected. The pack had two rockets and a fuel tank, strapped together, with controls which came out of the arms. The support that held the control sticks also gave the Marine the ability to rest his arms and utilize the rigid posture necessary to maneuver the rocket. The 1200 series models were all upgraded to allow for the integration of the Marine's personal AI, thus improving the effectiveness of the device. Lance could only pray for the millionth time that some digi-punching bureaucrats hadn't ended the program. Once Lance reached the light engineering workshops on level 4, he realized he would have to be innovative if he sought to retrieve the Death Pack. He briefly considered simply signing one out, should they be available, but realized it wouldn't be as impressive to his new commander as acquiring it on his own, like good sergeants were wont to do. Like all good Marines, he knew that gear adrift was a gift, and one with which he would cement his good standing with his senior NCOs and new commander. Very quickly, Lance noticed that the engineering workshop was empty. Apparently, the security SOPs had changed while he was iced, because he couldn't imagine Sergeant Fontaine letting that slide. As usual, he found that thoughts of any of his past brothers and sisters brought on waves of sadness and guilt that he lived while they died. For those who ran, he had trouble feeling anything but pity, yet he mourned the loss of the rest of his unit, the only family he could remember. Knowing that nothing looked more suspicious than skulking around, Lance decided to brazenly walk in, acting as if he owned the place. Seeing that it was in fact empty, he jumped onto the computer terminal and tried logging in, hoping that Bardo was on his side and he'd already been given clearance. When Bardo failed to bring him the luck he sought through prayer, Lance did what all good Marines did. He made his own luck. He pulled Xena out of the pouch on his hip and inserted her into the AI access port to let her work her magic. Once she'd gotten him into the system, Lance did a quick search for the RPP-1217 and was surprised that it had been canceled. He remembered hearing about the extreme loss of life perfecting that technology, so the idea that it would be so willfully abandoned and not replaced with a better piece of equipment baffled him. He knew that the White Knights had little use for the Marine as an individual, but this somehow seemed beyond the pale. Luckily, despite his mental ramblings, Xena was able to find what he sought. He memorized the storage locker number and logged out of the system. After resecuring his trusty AI, Lance went to the back of the room and opened the walk-in storage locker. He spent a frantic 15 minutes looking for the Death Pack before finding its storage box. Lance stared, trying to determine how he would carry this out without being caught, when he was startled by the appearance of one of the many cleaning augs that populated any large compound on the planet. Lance tried to sound official, straightening his posture and remembering his military bearing. "Who are you? The cleaning augs isn't due for 15 minutes, he said to the easily startled girl. It quickly became clear that the augs in this era weren't tolerated in the same way that they had been on Cardamine, because the stench of her groveling subservience was overwhelming. As she stared at him, noticing how different he was from the Beta City Marines, a slight knowing look came to her. Maybe it's the tattoo she can see peeking out from my uniform. Lance watched as her demeanor visibly changed, as if her humanity had explosively returned. "You're him, the one Basil told us about, aren't you?" said the shy woman child. "He said you were nice to him, that you fed him your lunch. I'm Ashanti, by the way." It was odd. Almost as if knowing he had been vouched for, Ashanti's whole demeanor changed. It became clear that Lance had made several unknown allies with his simple act of generosity that morning. With his years of military training, he couldn't help but wonder if it hadn't made him enemies as well. Yes, I met Basil this morning. Yes, we ate lunch together. Now, since you clearly know that I don't have orders to be here, what are you going to do? She appeared to contemplate things for a while before answering. I am just an Augs. If you were to order me, I suppose I would be obligated to show you the back way out of here that we used to cart off the refuse. No broader hint was ever given, and Lance wasn't foolish enough to turn it down. Thank you. So that is an order. You will lead me out of the workshop through the servant's entrance, he told her, and she led him out of the workshop through a rear exit, which he had somehow missed in his search through the room. Ashanti had jumped at his words, clearly not expecting a thank you. Nzuri, she told him in her usual subservient tone, but Lance couldn't understand what she had just said. Oh well, he thought. At least now I can get away with the gear and impress the colonel. Chapter 7
Headquarters, Commanding Officer, 6907th TAC Regiment.
Once on the surface, Lance donned the death pack, then quickly hooked Xena into her slot as the onboard AI. After completing all of the safety checks, he took a moment to look at the majesty of Kijiji before initiating the engines. Though the liftoff procedures were complicated and extremely dangerous, Lance managed them easily and with no explosions. He turned control over to Xena as soon as liftoff was achieved so that he could enjoy the view of his new home. Upon safely landing on the glassy quad just outside the 6907th TAC headquarters, Lance powered down the engine and began walking into the building. He never bothered to take off the pack, hoping it would create the impression he was going for. He found the officer's headquarters guarded by a Jotun whom Xena identified as Lieutenant Pavel Njalsen. It looked like Njalsen was serving dual roles of gatekeeper and aide-de-camp to the colonel. Once he reached the officer's headquarters, he immediately went to Lieutenant Pavel Njalsen and reported in.
Sir, Sergeant Lance Scipio, reporting to the commander of the 6907th as ordered, sir.
Bellowed Lance as loudly as he could while saluting sharply. The junior officer who stood in front of him didn't seem impressed, but merely lifted one of his six limbs and gestured for him to go into the colonel's office. Lance knew that was all the invitation he'd get, so he quickly dropped his salute and marched in. His gait was off due to the difficulties of carrying the weight of the death pack, but he mustered all the dignity he could, momentarily regretting that he hadn't decided to wear his battle armor, and walked into the office that would spell his doom or his salvation. Colonel Marchuka was sitting at his desk, laughing quietly to himself as he watched some video on his digisheet of a young cadet with a boner standing naked in a troggy tunnel. What kind of weird shite is he into? And could that sound actually be laughter? I have to shake out of it, get my head in the game. Again, Lance repeated the formulaic expression which had been drilled into his head since his days in the crash.
Sir, Sergeant Lance Scipio reporting to Colonel Marchuka as ordered, sir.
Lance bellowed, louder than he had for that pompous lieutenant, while crisply saluting. He held the salute, waiting for the colonel to acknowledge him, but Colonel Marchuka seemed to take pleasure in taking his time. After a considerable pause, Lance's salute was returned, and he was able to drop his arm back to his side, having returned to a rigid attention. The colonel stared at him for a few minutes, seeming to see into his soul before he spoke through his voice box. I see that you decided to make an entrance, stealing that piece of Marine Corps technology. I should have you stripped of your stripes and whipped in front of the entire regiment, but your record was impressive. I found it and you when I asked the Nighthummers to look into the disappearance of my mother, Captain Grim Gertie. You were their price for services rendered and the solution as well. It seems that you will find her according to their prophecies and that to do so I will need you here. You will train my G2 class of cadets in your antiquated combat tactics, and if you live, you will follow that freshman class throughout their time as cadets. Officially, you will be the veteran sergeant for 1st Squad Whiskey Company, but the rest of the regimental cadets will begin learning your historic method. I will give you some leeway, but don't mistake that for weakness because you're still a Marine. Lance was taken aback. This established Jotun officer, a colonel and combat veteran, was Captain Grim Gertie's son? Fate had truly been unkind if he had been on ice for that long. Sir, with all due respect, I am not sure what all has changed and how my old tactics would be of any use. I imagine technology and the situation on the battlefield has changed a lot if what I know was scrapped.
shouldn't I? Colonel Marchuka cut him off. I have told you what your standing orders are. Train these cadets as you were trained. You are to assume command of 1st Squad Whiskey Company and train them to the standards you knew from your era. They are green cadets, just weeks out of novice school, with a whole lot of learning to do. 1st Squad does seem to have the reputation as the dumping ground for all the misfits and malcontents that are five hands away from being removed from the Marine Corps. All of them live or die as a team from here on out. That includes you too, Sergeant. Luckily for you, you have your responsibilities to the rest of the cadets in the regiment to balance the sword you are walking on. I'm confident you can fix it and turn it around. Just remind them that they start their training with you as AUG's candidates and hope that it motivates some improvement. If not, they can just as easily be retired. Lance tried again, desperate to understand. Yes, sir. And what is the significance of my tactical knowledge? Why is it? Colonel Marchuka again cut Lance off. I don't know why it is important. The Hummers don't give us that level of detail. They speak in riddles and half-truths, which we are then expected to unravel. I will not try to do so. I will just follow the advice I was given and honor my bargain. Enough questions, carry on. Lance tried one more time, acutely aware of the risk he was taking. Sir, with all due respect, if you know about me, why not just go to the island and get your mother? Kalino isn't that far away. You could be there in a matter of... Again, the colonel cut him off, visibly frustrated by Lance's antics, but also intrigued. You mean you didn't come from Detroit? It was hard enough to justify that when the general thought it was just a once-in-a-lifetime interbase transfer. But a base other than that? The only island of any significant size capable of housing any base that I know of on Tranquility IV is Cardamine, and it sits empty, devoid of sentient life. Not even a Hardit or Trog base there. After bracing himself, sure that retribution would follow his impertinence during the conversation, Lance answered Colonel Marchuka. Sir, I went through my training in Kalino, which sits on Cardamine Island. I don't know why the city ceased to be. I don't know why its very existence has been lost to time. I do know that you've indeed lost it, and it surely waits there to be found. Let's take a team there to investigate. There was a brief pause as Colonel Marchuka seemed to digest the information. If you speak the truth about this Kalino, then its existence is classified so deep that even I don't know about it. You will not speak of it. You will not tell your cadets about it. You will simply train them to the standards you are taught, maybe add a bit more discipline, and that will be all. If there happens to be a training mishap down the line and you make an emergency landing on Cardamine, well, that is up to the gods, isn't it? Knowing he was likely pushing his luck, Lance asked for one more favor from his commander. Roger that, sir. Now, if I might again be so bold as to ask that an auxiliary technician be assigned to me so we can get all of the equipment issues brought up to par. When I was in the engineering lab, sir, they looked like some of their technical prowess has been lost to time as well. If you could assign me Augs Tech Basil, I don't know his last name, but he was assigned to the cryo lab this morning, then we can get started today. When I was a cadet, said technician would live in the sergeant's quarters of the first section leader Habdisk. If he is assigned to me, it would double the speed with which I might get this transition started. Maybe speed up finding your mother? Plus, it will motivate these cadets by giving them a daily reminder of what awaits them if they don't straighten up. Colonel Marchuka was clearly displeased, but was highly motivated to find his mother. You presume much, little human, but it will be done. The orders will be in the system, and he will report to you after his shift in cryo ends. I won't waste food on this failed Marine, however, so your squad will feed him from their rations. Now that will be all. Dismissed. Chapter 8 City Phase Unit 1, Habdisk 612, 1st Squad Barracks. After getting reissued his basic kit, Lance headed to the Habdisk his cadets were assigned as soon as he was done with his appointment with Colonel Marchuka. He quickly began looking for the command section's Habdisk, knowing there would be a room off to the side for the assigned veteran sergeant. When he finally located his squad, with all of their barracks rooms conveniently located in the same Habdisk, he was appalled at what he saw. The room looked like it had been ransacked by hungry Chulbas who had set up their warren here. Those furry little drentlings would tunnel through anything and then pop up to the surface and attack any unwary soul traipsing around up there. He vaguely remembered one of his instructors mentioning that the Cholba resembled the badgers from Earth, but bigger and meaner. Lance scanned the room again and couldn't help but think about how far things seemed to have fallen. That, or maybe the Continental Marines weren't as tough as they'd like you to believe. Not wanting to ponder the state of things, he quickly headed into the sergeant's room in the command section barracks. Once he opened the door, however, he was covered in an avalanche of various pieces of old gear and supplies. It seemed this room had been where the cadets threw anything they didn't need and thought that by its being hidden meant they had cleaned. "This just won't do," fumed Lance. "As soon as those cadets get back from their training mission, they're going to be in a world of hurt. I guess the colonel wasn't exaggerating the craptastic nature of my new command. I'll just have to channel my inner Fontaine and right this ship, lest I end up culled like she was." After thoroughly cleaning his quarters, Lance began placing his gear in the appropriate place and installing a few pictures of his childhood friends in the provided digital and holographic frames. The junk that had been in the sergeant's room was tossed into the open bay portion of the barracks where the cadets lived. He opened the storage compartment under his mattress and securely stored the extra AIs from his fallen brothers and sisters, making sure to authenticate his biometrics in the system using the code provided by Lieutenant Njalson. Before sealing the compartment, Lance spotted the chip for Dante, the AI of his childhood. He contemplated switching back, but something about that idea set off warning bells in his head and told him to reserve judgment on Xena for a while longer. Once he was confident that he was in the network security system and able to utilize all of the staff and instructor functions available, he headed out of his room and secured it behind him. Lance waited in the barracks, looking around to assess the individual lockers of his new charges, hoping beyond hope that they'd at least kept their personal areas in shipshape. He had initially assumed that tactics were all he had to teach these urchins, but then he'd been slapped in the face by reality. These barracks didn't belong to Marines, they belonged to undisciplined children. He thought back to when he was a G2 cadet, which wasn't that long ago to him, despite his veteran sergeant status. As a freshman cadet, he had known enough to be more of a danger to himself than any potential enemies. Even then, Lance and his fellow cadets had more discipline than this. He stared at the timer on his Amy, checking to see how long he had before his cadets returned. "It definitely feels odd saying my cadets," he thought. But if he was going to beat this rabble into shape, allowing them to earn the right to call themselves Marines, he had to channel the very person he hated as a cadet. This time, the beatings would continue until his morale improved. Seeing that he had a few hours left, he decided to look at the pictures he had with him on Amy, his small supercomputer which he wore on his forearm. The Amy was officially designated as the PE-1621 Artificial Intelligence Individually Mounted Electronic Equipment, but was often simply referred to as Amy. This extremely rugged tablet could be worn in both combat suits and regular duty uniforms, and was capable of housing the Marines' personal AI when worn in the smart fabric uniform, and tied into the AI when worn in conjunction with combat armor. And Amy served as the Marines' personal computer, mailbox, library, and training aid, and featured alarm functions, a digital watch, calendar, and weather report interface. Realizing that he had some time to himself, a rarity in Marine life, Lance began to tinker with his interface into Xena's programming. Neither Captain Grim Gurdy nor Aura had ever told him why he had to switch his AI in the final moments before the failed QEP debacle. Unlike most AIs, Xena seemed to actively resist his efforts to learn more. She seemed to treat it as a game, constantly booting him from the AI programming section, instead redirecting him to other mundane functions. Lance was so engrossed in his digital battle that he jumped when she talked to him. "What gives you the right to peek under my skirt, Marine? If you wanted to know what color panties I was wearing, you could have asked, and for the record, I'm not wearing any." Lance wasn't sure, but he could have sworn she even harumphed. Could an AI even feel that kind of emotion? Where did the line between machine and sentience lie? He decided to think tactically and launched his own verbal frontal assault. "Why were you assigned to me? What is your model specialty?" He didn't believe she would answer, but he had to at least try. Xena surprised him when she actually replied, having expected more chicanery from her. "Lance, what I'm about to tell you is both complicated and classified. My original programming model was that of your standard engineering variant AI model. All you need to know about that is summed up in our motto, 'If God or man could build it, the engineer could destroy it.' If an engineer could destroy it, then they could rebuild it even better. What makes me unique is that while I was in storage after the death of my last human, my programming was altered by spacer technician Aura. She was experimenting with the ability to upgrade existing AI models, allowing a single AI to stay with its end user, even if said user received a transfer, promotion, or change of career specialty. She succeeded, she cracked the code, and now I contain every AI specialty. What can I say? I'm your best friend if you want to start a rebellion. And if that isn't exactly what floats your void, then I would just be handy to have around. As for the AIs from the Tango Squad, Dog Company, 1st Battalion, 941st TAC Regiment, I cracked those while we were cryogenically frozen. They can do what I can do. Lance was dumbfounded. He possessed an AI with more skills than he could fathom, and the ability to spread like a virus, giving that information to other AIs as well. Xena never mentioned such treasonous thoughts again. Now why would my Jotun officers want me to have this kind of AI? What makes me more than someone else more worthy? That I cannot say. It requires information not available, thus requiring conclusions without all of the variables. I can tell you the what, but not the why of our situation. The answer was as frustrating as it was incomplete and unhelpful. In an effort to calm himself down, giving his subconscious mind the time it needed to process this information, Lance decided to browse the digital pictures he kept stored. After playing around, staring at his pictures, Lance decided it was time to get back to work and went looking for the company headquarters to formally introduce himself. He went into the map interface on his AIMI and followed its directions to HQ so he could report in. Chapter 9 Headquarters, Whiskey Company, 8th Battalion, 6907th TAC Regiment. As he marched to the headquarters, Xena was busy getting him every scrap of pertinent data on his new command, and the personnel files of every cadet. She will probably tell me what they had for breakfast, the color of their poop, and the name of their first kiss before I even get there, he smirked to himself. His company commander was a Captain Grigona and was on the shortlist for a promotion if First Squad's performance could be addressed so the company's honor could be clear. She was rumored to be one fierce Marine if the scuttlebutt he'd had Xena dig up earlier was to be believed. Lance certainly hoped so because he would need every ally he had if he was going to turn First Squad into Marines anytime this side of forever. As soon as he reached the company headquarters, he entered the antechamber and reported in to the senior sergeant on duty, with all the pomp and circumstance he could muster. He followed the DM 16.1 to the letter, hoping to make a better impression with his company commander than he had with his colonel. The senior sergeant, whose body language read as more machine than human, seemed less than impressed as he told Lance to have a seat and wait to be called back. The senior sergeant certainly embodied what came to mind when thinking of a sergeant with years of combat experience. His body was covered with war's merit badges. He was scarred and possessed a hardened edge. He would definitely scare off civilians if there were any left. Senior veteran sergeant Jelani Keita was everything you'd want if the White Knights were making recruiting posters for the Human Marine Corps. He was a mammoth of a man, approximately 6'6" tall, though it was hard to tell with him seated, and full of more musculature than Lance had ever seen on a single body. He was darker skin than the island Marines Lance was used to interacting with, and missing the tattoos which would have told his career path, though his scars told their own tales. This barrel-chested sergeant definitely seemed at home in his stripes, something Lance would have to work on. Until then, he would have to fake it with his new wayward charges. After an hour had gone by, Lance was told rather unceremoniously to go into the captain's office. He smartly marched in to meet his new company commander, having no real idea of what to expect from her. When he got into the room, he was surprised at how fierce she looked. Lance knew that the average Jotun was a lethally capricious hexapod creature, and was always glad that they both served the same masters, the White Knights. Like all Jotuns, Captain Grigona had six limbs and was covered in shaggy fur, but her huge head was covered in scars and places where the fur couldn't grow because of the copious amounts of scar tissue. The prominent ridge running from the front to the back of her head had chunks missing out of it, reminders of battles she would obviously never forget. Luckily, her fangs didn't scare him, though many of his peers couldn't claim the same. As Lance scanned the office, he could see that Grigona loved the pageantry of military life, as her walls were covered in war trophies and digipics of her career. What further surprised him about her was her very presence underground, as many believed that the only way to move a Jotun underground was difficult, if not impossible, requiring strong narcotics or even stronger grog. Clearly, this wasn't a problem for the captain. Lance instantly stopped his musings as Captain Grigona began to speak, using the voice boxes that were ubiquitous with life in the White Knight Empire. As he stood at attention, he couldn't help but smell something foul in the air, and remembered his old sergeants telling him about how the Jotuns were notorious for having breath that could instantly kill a Muriani in full kit. Not a bad capability, if it was true, since many of the regiments based on Tranquility had sent battalions to fight in the frontier war against the Muriani. "So are you the great savior, the one the Hummers are so aflutter about? Frankly, little human, I don't see it. I will tell you this, I don't like it and I don't like you, but if you can turn around first squad, you can live. And if your training regime proves useful, I might use it during our next battle. But you live under the sword until you prove your right to live, Sergeant. Now, as per the Colonel's orders, Auxiliary Technician Basil Terlor has transferred to your command. If you fail, however, he dies too. That will be all." Before he departed, Lance decided to try his luck again, since it had worked with Colonel Marchuka. "And with all due respect, how long do I have to turn this ship around to your satisfaction?" As he tensely waited for her reply, he couldn't help but notice how she flexed two of her 12 rubbery suction-tipped tubes that passed for her default hand configurations. He'd seen that these were capable of becoming 3-inch claws that were as serrated and as effective as any Marine combat knife. He contemplated the stories he had heard of decapitations used to kill disobedient Marines, of the times when he'd personally witnessed it, and concluded that upsetting the captain wouldn't be in his best interest. These claws released some sort of toxin or infection into the body of their prey, paralyzing them, and were used to turn the already marshaled Jotun species into a lethal mercenary fighting force. He felt like he had been waiting for hours, though Lance knew it had only been 3 minutes. After taking that pregnant pause, she snarled, "You have until I decide there has been enough time. No more, no less. Dismissed." Not wanting to overstay his welcome, Lance saluted before quickly and quietly leaving the office. "I guess that I will just have to make friends with the other sergeants and pump the NCO channels for information." Chapter 10 City Phase Unit 1, Habdisk 612, Beta City. 1st Squad, Whiskey Company, 8th Battalion, 6907th TAC Regiment. Back at City Phase Unit CPU 1, Habdisk 612, in the 100 rooms where his 1st Squad berthed, Lance found Basil outside the Habdisk pacing, looking as jumpy as ever. "I really will have to teach that Aug some self-discipline. He jumps like a scared creshling." Basil looked so shifty that Lance briefly wondered what he might have stolen, but Lance laughed it off and walked over to greet him. "Basil, welcome to my little slice of crazy town, home of the Cull candidates, that lovely little tradition of killing off the bottom quarter of every graduating cadet class. You and I have a lot of work ahead of us, whipping these cadets into shape." Basil swallowed visibly, obviously preparing himself to do something he saw as unpleasant. "With all due respect, am I, and Augs, the best person for this? I failed out of my first week of cadethood." Lance, having reviewed the complete files of Basil Terlor, was prepared for this question. "Basil, the very thing that made you an unsuitable Marine will make you perfect for this job. If I'm to revive fighting tactics that were abandoned with my generation, then I must have someone with your technical expertise. I saw that you are something of a technophile, preferring to tinker on war machines than fighting the war itself. That has a role as well, and if you had been born to sailors instead of Marines, you would be living the good life on some comfy warboat. We will need to shake the dust off the old equipment, probably make new gear, and generally reinvent the wheel. In exchange, you get out from under that hardit and probably a fuller belly. As our technical support, you will, of course, face the same hell holes that we do. If we get cold, you retire too. But if we win, Basil, if we win, are you capable of that?" The pause was pregnant with uncertainty, as Lance wasn't sure Basil would want to assume the risks inherent with this new post. Just when the waiting got to be too much, Basil merely nodded and gave a surprisingly firm, Yes, Sergeant Scipio. The relief was almost palpable. Lance had cleared the first of many hurdles to resurrecting his era in the modern Marines. Hoorah! That was a wise choice, Basil. Go secure your bunk in room 102. That's the section leader's quarters for first section, and the room off the back was originally the veteran sergeant's room before your lot turned it into the shag shack. We'll get you kitted up soon, but until then, go ahead and secure your bunk and squared away. Dismissed. As Basil turned towards room 102, he was stopped by Lance's parting shot. When I want the sword that was in my cryopod in my room as well. Chapter 11 City Phase Unit 1, Hab Disc 612, Beta City. 1st Squad, Whiskey Company, 8th Battalion, 6907th TAC Regiment. Lance was waiting in his room off of the command section room when 1st Squad straggled back into their barracks from their latest training mission. He had rigged minor explosives to the wall lockers in each room, set to go off when the SA-18 thermal explosive detonators established that a predetermined target group was present, thus maximizing the carnage he planned for his cadets. This explosion caused the rooms to fill with CW-1028 gas, a non-lethal crowd control gas which temporarily caused severe eye and respiratory pain and skin irritation. Further, it caused excessive vomiting, and in some of the most severe reactions, it caused temporary blindness. It was known to cause hardened Marines to tear up and have snot dripping from their noses. When the cadets returned in their smart fabric uniforms, they wouldn't have the equipment to protect them from the party Lance had planned for them. Lance had suited himself up in his combat armor, the battle-scarred suit he had worn on his last combat mission. He looked like every other battle-hardened veteran to have ever worn the human Marine Corps mantle, deadly from head to toe. The more observant cadets would see that Sergeant Scipio took great pride in his armor's appearance, which shone from its most recent cleaning, though it had obviously seen field usage. In fact, the painted-on stripes were the only fresh and unblemished spots on his shining ace combat suit, having been added just before he was cryogenically frozen. Unlike many other sergeants of his day, Lance was still using his mini, even though he knew that the standard best practices meant that he would have to revert to a boring old SA-71. After tying into the Whiskey Company local battle network, referred to as the LB-Net, Lance waited. He had preloaded his ammunition carousel with rubberized non-lethal bullets and electroshock darts. If First Squad knew what was about to happen, they might volunteer to join the Auxies, though they wouldn't be allowed to quit so easily. When his sensors notified Xena that the cadets had all returned to their barracks, she implemented the protocol Lance had authorized. This protocol included the detonation of the gas and a pre-planned order for the entire squad to assemble in the company ready room to be sent to every cadet's AME. Once the gas had begun its task of causing mayhem, Lance walked out of his stateroom like the harbinger of death and began to spray the room with rubber rounds. Because his aim was assisted by Xena, they all scored direct hits, and some even scored double and triple hits as they bounced off of cadets onto other hard surfaces and then hit other cadets. When the command section looked like they had been raked over the coals, Lance shot each of them with electroshock darts and exited the room. He then began to systematically hit every room that housed First Squad, as none of the miscreants had thought to secure the situation, and none of the leadership had endeavored to take charge. I'm gonna have my work cut out for me, mused Lance, as he walked towards the company ready room, preparing for an ambush by these miscreants as they reported in. As he waited, Lance realized that he hadn't kitted Basil up. The poor Auxie would be choking on gas, just like the rest of Alpha Team. By Horden's hairy fanny, the poor bastard is gonna hate me for a few hours. I will have to make a point of getting him access to the showers. Once Lance was in position, he waited, hoping that these cadets would finally show some military discipline. As the time went on, he began to get angry that they hadn't come down the passageway, and began to understand the cruelties of his own veteran sergeants. After waiting for what felt like an eternity, he checked in with Xena for a status update, and was enraged to discover it had been an hour since he had given First Squad their orders. Before he could even ask, almost as if she had read his mind, Xena responded to his unspoken question. I can verify that all but two of 1st Squad, Whiskey Company, 8th Battalion, 6907th TAC Regiment, have read the digital orders you sent them. I checked with the in-room sensors and found that they went to the showers and now are waiting for you in the command section hab desk. The cameras, the ones we can't officially monitor, show they are waiting for you to come to them. All of them are armed with live rounds, but none of them bother to get into their combat suits, and they are packed in tight enough that I estimate with 95% accuracy that I can immobilize all 37 of them with just 19 rounds. There is a chance that one of them might kill you, as they are using fully functional SA-71s. Also be advised that it appears that these rifles have been hacked. Someone has unlocked features not intended for cadets. We also run the risk of killing or maiming one of them, though this is less of a concern. How shall we proceed? After pondering the tactical situation and consulting the schematics, Lance knew what he had to do. Briefly, but only briefly, he considered seeking out a different plan, since the current one risked the physical health of his cadets. But they'd made their bed when they didn't follow his orders to the letter. Having made his decision, Lance backtracked to the barracks where his cadets were holed up waiting for him. After taking great care with his aiming, he fired a single rubber dart at the fire suppression system, spraying the room in an instant deluge of freezing cold water. Before he could ask, Xena quickly switched to an electroshock dart and fired several rounds at the large puddle the cadets were all standing in. Their little standoff was over before the first cadet had even hit the ground. With the speed and diligence that Beta City had never seen from them, First Squad swarmed out of their barracks and straight into the hastily modified ambush Lance had set up when the situation changed. None of them got away unscathed, and rather than fight back or attempt to disengage and continue the mission with a flanking maneuver, they simply gave up. In an instant, he knew that this failing wasn't theirs. Their instructors had failed them. After 17 years training, for the Human Marine Corps began training straight out of the womb, they should have reacted instantly and without even having to think about it. In a brief moment of pity, Lance decided to give them some reprieve. "All right, First Squad, you have an hour to meet me in the company ready room. Anyone who disobeys and is not there will be immediately executed. Anyone who isn't 15 minutes early will report to Oxy Central and end their quest to become Marines. That will be all. Dismissed."